Please help me welcome our speaker this morning, the oldest in sobriety living member of Alcoholics Anonymous, Duke Paddock. Duke?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Duke Paddock. I'm so glad you said, "Hi, Duke," because it reminds me of something that I didn't hear. I wasn't present when it occurred, but I think it was sort of significant. Bill Wilson had gone to California a good many years ago. They were having a little difficulty out there getting things straightened up. I wonder if that has ever happened before or since. When you have a bunch of psychopathological people calling themselves Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the general way it is. And he went out there to see if he could be of some assistance to straightening things up, and they called a meeting together. Now, Bill had been speaking before a group of people here and there in the East, in New York, Philadelphia, even gotten as far west as Akron, and so on, and he would introduce himself this way: "I'm Bill W., and I'm an alcoholic." When he got to California, they all said, "Hi, Bill!" And the darn near knocked him off the podium. I think that's significant. I'm so glad here in Florida. I moved here from Southern California, so if I get a little confused, you'll understand why. I'm not nervous. And I like the way we say hello, because it shows something specifically about Alcoholics Anonymous, and that it is a bunch of human people. There's a great deal of humanity in Alcoholics Anonymous. But in my way of thinking, it's distinctive humanity. And this morning I want to discuss the character of Alcoholics Anonymous as I see it, as I've had the great privilege of seeing it over a number of years, and I've seen it change and yet maintain itself. Now, those are two absolutely diametrically opposed statements. I've seen it change, and yet I've seen it maintain itself. That's typical of us guys, of us ladies and gentlemen. Those of you who have heard me before know that that's one of my watchwords. Let's never forget for a moment that that's exactly what we are. Ladies and gentlemen. And as we know that to be the case, no matter what our past might have been, how we might have conducted ourselves in the past, as soon as we ally ourselves with this group of people, with this fellowship, we become ladies and gentlemen. Because we have to. And the reason we have to is this. Each one of us said this morning, "I am an alcoholic." Each one of us gave a promise to ourselves and to the world. One thing, and the only one thing that you and I know about June the 6th, 1992, is that we're not going to have a drink before we go to bed tonight. That's a promise. And a lady or a gentleman never goes back on her or his word. That's part of the character of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'd like to discuss for a few minutes with you this morning. I've made a few notes, because I don't want to forget, if I possibly can, some of the things that I wanted to say. The humanity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Think what that means. You and I were confused we were almost subhuman. Some of us had tough times. Others were fortunate not to have quite as such as tough times. But nevertheless, we almost excluded ourselves from the human race. And Alcoholics Anonymous came into our lives and welcomed us back into the human race. That's something for which we can be grateful, I think, and I hope you agree with me. So one of the characteristics of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'd like to discuss perhaps at length this morning is the dignity of our fellowship. The reason why I say we can call our fellowship one of dignity is to repeat myself, because we're composed of ladies and gentlemen. But we know something that people on the outside who are still drinking, who are still the victims of this disease of alcoholism, don't know. And that is that we are in touch with the greatest authority conceivable by man. Which reminds me of a strange and kind of cute little anecdote that some of you have heard. Dr. Einstein spent the last years of his life at Princeton, New Jersey. When the war was over, and I assure you I was the most unheroic officer in Uncle Sam's army, and I stayed in the United States most of the time. I had Katie with me about 80% of the time, and most of the places where we were, there were chapters of Alcoholics Anonymous, getting established or having been established and so on and so forth. And we moved to Long Island. The company that I worked for, it needs a little advertising. It's a little old company you never heard of called Procter & Gamble. It needs a little advertising. And they gave me Long Island as a territory, and I had a good friend. He was my commanding officer that lived in Trenton, New Jersey, and so I used to drive down there once in a while, and we'd drive through Princeton. And they tell this story about how Dr. Einstein, on nice days, used to love to sit on his front porch, and almost every afternoon, every school day anyway, a little girl, maybe 10 or 11 years old, or maybe 12 years old, came by and would stop, and she and the good doctor would have an animated conversation. And they both seemed to be enjoying themselves very much. And after one of those days, and the young lady had gone on her way, one of the neighbors of the great scientist went to him and said, "What do you and the little girl talk about?" And he grinned and he said, probably in pretty broken English, "Well, it's very easy. She brings me cookies and I help her with her arithmetic." Think what that young lady had. Personal contact with one of the greatest mathematicians that ever lived. And he helped her with her arithmetic. Now translate that to what we have. You and I have personal contact with the greatest authority conceivable, a power higher than ourselves, in which we have absolute confidence. And we know that by to that power and using that power, we have the solution to every problem and the answer to every question connected with our ailment, our disease of alcoholism. Now, we accept that now as a perfectly acceptable phrase, the disease of alcoholism. Yet for a good many years, after Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson got the idea of creating Alcoholics Anonymous, the medical society, the medical authorities, took a dim view of that. They didn't want to admit that there was such a thing as a disease for which there's no cure. And you really can't blame them, because the doctors were accustomed to isolating a germ, putting it on a slide, looking at it through a microscope, identifying it as being a particular type of microbe or whatever they called it, and writing a prescription which, if the patient took regularly, would effect a cure. And yet here you and I, we're insisting that we are the victims of a disease that has absolutely no cure. Let me ask anybody in this room, or any member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, to give me the definition of a cure. Is there a single one of us that would be interested in one dry martini? One scotch and soda? That's ridiculous. If we're going to do some drinking, let's do some drinking. Start out with a quart and take it from there. How are you going to define a cure? People have said to me, what's an alcoholic? Well, I've heard an alcoholic described as a fellow that drinks between drinks. Or like the guy that jumps on his horse and rides off in all directions at the same time. I don't know what an alcoholic is. I happen to know that I am one, and when I was drinking, I was an entirely different individual than I am now. I was confused. I was nervous. I was scared. And I'm sure all of us were. And now this higher power, in which we have absolute confidence, has come into my life and your life in a dignified sort of way and given me the answer. I would much rather be a recovering alcoholic, knowing that I'm doing it every day of my life, than to be a so-called cured alcoholic. I hope you agree with me with that. The greatest authority of them all, I made a couple of notes here. UPS. What's UPS? Well, there's an organization called UPS. But to you and me, it means uninterrupted power supply. Power. Think what that means. You remember this poem, "This I beheld or dreamed it in a dream, there spread a cloud of dust along a plain, and underneath the cloud or in it raged a furious battle, and swords shocked against swords and shield. A prince's banner wavered, then staggered back hemmed by foes. A craven hung along the battle's edge and thought, had I a sword of keener steel, that blue blade the king's son bears, but this blunt thing," he snapped and flung it from his hand, lowering, crept away and left the field. Then came the king's son, wounded, sore bedecked and weaponless, and saw the broken sword, hilt buried in the dry and trodden sound, and ran and seized it up, and with battle cry anew hewed his enemy down and saved a great cause that heroic day. That's a bit of verse written by Robinson, I think his name was, called Opportunity. And think what you and I have. Because, ladies and gentlemen, each one of us is either a king's son or a king's daughter, if we believe in a power higher than ourselves in which we have absolute confidence, that I believe in. I think I'm a son of God. I think my fellow members, my gal members in AA are daughters of God. And being a member of a royal family like that, we do have the solution to every problem the answer to every question, no matter what it is. I heard a preacher some time ago in a church that I belong to out in Manhasset, Long Island, and I'll tell you a little bit something about the membership. There was one Sunday where every usher in that church was a member of AA. So we were a typical congregation with a whole bunch of lushes that belonged to the church. But every one of those ushers was a member of AA, and the preacher was sort of impressed with what had happened to some of the members of his congregation. So he wrote a sermon and delivered it one morning, and I have it in my file, and I've looked at it recently. And he realized that there was a spiritual power in AA that not only handles the problem of alcoholism, but transcends, and I like that word, transcends, and goes to an answer to all questions and to all problems. And we say it. I'm going to wander a little bit when I'm in these remarks this morning. We say it. You heard Nick read it this morning. Practice these principles in all our affairs. Sure, it says in there. Many of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Of course they don't expect us to be perfect, but at least they expect us to try, and it's not a bad idea to try, because the alternative is pretty grim, isn't it? I think it's a perfect analogy to compare ourselves with a diabetic. Do you think a diabetic is going to forget to take his insulin? Are you and I going to forget for one day to take our AA? I don't think so. If we do, we're going to be something like Paderewski. When he was the best in the world, the greatest pianist that was alive at that time, he practiced 7 hours a day. Why? For these reasons, he said, if I miss one day, I'll know it. If I miss 2 days, the critics will know it. If I miss 3 days, the whole world will know it. Ladies and gentlemen, if you and I miss one day thinking about our disease of alcoholism, you bet your life we'll know it. And we won't have to wait 3 days before the whole world will know it, because we're in the grip, in like a vice, of an uncontrollable disease that has no cure. And yet we're happy about it, because that's the humanity of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're happy about it. Why are we happy about it? Well, I've made a couple of notes here. Because we're composed of fine people. Now, it sounds a little conceited to say that we're composed of fine people, but we are. No matter what happened, no matter what had happened to those people who came to see me when I was a patient of Dr. Bob's, shortly after August, it was right after Labor Day of 1940 that I went down to Akron. I was living in Toledo, and I went for a weekend hospital there. And by the way, I had a private room, $8, $8 a day for a private room in a hospital. And incidentally, you might be interested in knowing the diagnosis with which I was admitted. Acute gastritis. If you want to go to a hospital, fellas or gals, tell them you got acute gastritis. All alcoholics have acute gastritis. Thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, we can be admitted now under the diagnosis of alcoholism. Maybe the fellowship has made a contribution to the world. Maybe in addition to making you and me feel happy, feel contented, feel secure. Maybe we've made a contribution because of the million of us, the millions of us now, who are proving that we are the victims of a disease, but we have a way of recovery. And that way of recovery is practical. One of the reasons why it's practical, and here again I'm going to refer to my notes. Each one of us is a dedicated individual. Dedicated the fact that we can be comfortable, that we can be secure, that we can be free from those worries, that confusion, that feeling of hopelessness that was affecting us, bothering us, making our lives unmanageable for a long, long period of time because of the practice of the simple program of Alcoholics Anonymous conducted every day by fine people. And that's what we are. There's been a lot of talk in the last 3 or 4 years. There have been all sorts of rumors around. Bill Wilson was a womanizer. Ladies and gentlemen, he wasn't any more of a womanizer than I am. I love to embrace the ladies. Any of you want to, I'll be very glad to give you a hug. But if you hear things like that, those things happen to all good things. Don't be concerned about them. Just remember what Dr. Bob used to say and kept repeating over and over again to those of us that knew him. And Bill reflected these same remarks. Let's keep it simple. If we keep it simple, we keep it practical. We believe in pragmatism. What is pragmatism? Well, it's a rather imposing sounding word. I studied ethical theory when I was in college from a great philosopher, and a fellow by the name of Peirce built up this school of pragmatism. The idea is that if it works, it's right. And you and I know that it works. Why does it work? Because we keep it simple. We don't say to ourselves, we're going to quit drinking for the rest of our lives. Why go to all that extra trouble? Let's just think about today. What can we do today? One thing I'm sure, and that is we can stay away from a drink. What can we do about yesterday? Not a darn thing as far as our alcoholism is concerned, but we can do two things. And once again, we're keeping it simple. Apologize. That's the ninth step. And pay our bills. That's absolute honesty. That's the only responsibility we have about yesterday. Isn't that right? The ninth step. Made direct amends wherever possible, except to injure them or others. That's a paraphrase, but you know what I mean. Pay our bills. Why? Because we believe in absolute honesty. And what a practical thing that is. Absolute honesty. I heard it from a profane little wretch, but I loved him. The reason why I call him a profane little wretch is that he's the only man I ever heard who could swear gracefully. He'd been a first sergeant in World War I. And his vocabulary was tremendous. I should never, under any circumstance, attempt to quote him. I have to paraphrase some of his remarks. But he called on me in the hospital, and he said, "Sit down. I want to tell you a few things." And I sat down. Well, I was seated, as a matter of fact. I was seated on the side of the bed. He said, "I'm going to tell you a few things. In the first place, you got to be honest, and you're a liar." And I reared back, and he said, "Now, don't get your feathers all ruffled. I know you're a liar. We were all liars. But in addition to being a liar, you're a blankety-blank fool. Why? Because you're working too hard. Because you have to remember so much. Think that over. Isn't that a fact? You remember what it was like on Wednesday when you said to Katie what you'd done on Tuesday, by Friday life was a complicated mess. I was wearing myself out. We're all accomplished liars when we're drinking. And he showed me how practical it was not to wear myself out. And the reason we pay our bills is because we believe in absolute honesty. And it's repeated over and over and over again in our literature, in that literature that keeps you and me alive, practicing these principles in all our affairs. And these principles include the dignity of absolute honesty. I think that's a description of some of the character of our fellowship. Let's see what else I got down. What does AA do? Well, it does quite a lot of things. Got quite a lot of accomplishments. One of the things we do know about AA is that there has never been a failure in a 12th step. How do you say that, Duke? There's never been a failure in a 12th step. Why? Let me illustrate. These two guys came to see me on a Sunday afternoon. The Sunday after Labor Day, the Sunday before I went to Akron to be down there with those people. And they thanked me for the opportunity of coming to see me because they said, if we tell you about us, we know we'll stay sober. And we hope you will. Now that's backwards. But that's one of the beautiful things about AA. We're backwards in a logical sort of way. That's why when you and I go out to make a 12th step, we know that we'll remain sober because we're doing something active. We're taking that insulin that we have to take every day. We're doing it because it is part of our treatment, part of our recovery. We hope that the person or persons to whom we're talking will be successful as we are. We can't be guaranteed that, but we can be guaranteed of our own success. We weren't in the habit of being successful. Everything was going wrong when we were drinking. Sure, some made it pretty well, others went to jail, some made it pretty well, others ended up in insane asylums, some made it pretty well, others were the dregs of society. Regardless of what we had been before, right now we are successful because of the daily application. And that's the thing that I like about the character of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I call it character because I believe it is. So, that's an accomplishment. Never a failure on a 12th step. That's great. We've done something. We've accomplished something. We were in the habit of not accomplishing. I was the vice president very frequently. Never was the president. Never quite qualified. Maybe they put me in as the assistant or something like that. I went to war as a second lieutenant. I got to be a first lieutenant a little bit later. I was in AA, but it was kind of secondary. We don't have to be secondary anymore. That's what I like about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I have down here honest in the greatest sense of the world. Word. Honest in the greatest sense of the word. Every time that I made out a report when I was working, after I joined AA, it was honest. You do the same thing right now. We all do the same thing. every time we make a report, recognizing how practical it is, how comfortable it is, how much security we have. What are some of the other accomplishments? Friendship. Katie and I moved here 4 years ago in April of 1988. You received us. You received us in the gracious, most hospitable sort of way. You welcomed us. We were part of your gang, and we appreciate it. And as frequently as possible, I like to express that appreciation, because right away we made friends. Wherever Katie and I have gone since I've been a member of AA, and I've had the pleasure of being retired for a good many years, I had a birthday in March and became part of the Gettysburg Address. You can figure what that was. Sure you can. 47 years. That's 27 years that I've been retired, and we've had the opportunity of going here and there. And wherever we've gone, we've made friends. So there's a lot of assets in the character of Alcoholics Anonymous. Assets, friends, great people. We're never alone. Never alone. We met a guy. We went to a meeting one night on the Underground on a Thursday night, and it was a big night in London, shopping night, and went out to Swiss Cottage, and we were a little late there, and we got in late, and the meeting had started. And then they asked me who I was, and I told them I was from America, and they thought I was a newcomer, and they wanted to give me the dope, and they gave me the dope. And then when the meeting was over, a fellow came up and said, "Well, you shan't have to go back on the Underground because I have a mota." And we went to our apartment in his mota. He happened to be the Rolls-Royce distributor for the West End of London. What a mota! There are other things that you get with membership in AA. A friend of yours might drive you around London in a Rolls-Royce. Went to Paris, met another guy. He took us out to a simple little French cafe, and we met a new type of French cooking, and he grinned at us, and he had a kind of a bad accent, but we knew he was telling the truth, because he welcomed us to the city that's known for its frivolity, known for its champagne, now known for its active part in the world and the field and the loveliness of Alcoholics Anonymous. Went to Rome, looked it up in the telephone book. There was Alcoholics Anonymous in Italian, but I could tell what it was, and I telephoned there, and lo and behold, a person answered and spoke English and told us about a meeting that was conducted in St. Paul's inside the walls, not the famous one outside the walls, but inside the walls, conducted in English. And so we went to Rome and we found friends. They were great friends. Wherever you go, the character, the dignity, the safety, the security, the comfort of Alcoholics Anonymous is always with us. We went a few other places, Stockholm. We got off, got to the hotel, and I had this man's name, and I called him up, and he said, "Yeah," and I said, "You belong to Alcoholics Anonymous?" "Yeah, I belong to Alcoholics Anonymous, and can I be of any assistance to you?" And I said, "No, I just wanted to say hello. We're from Los Angeles." "Well, you are more than welcome, and if you want to come to a meeting, I will be very glad to come and pick you up." Well, we couldn't accept his invitation. But friends, isn't that great? Went to Vienna. Our name had been sent ahead. And there was a man waiting for us at the airport, and he had Duke on a big sign in front of him. And I knew that he wanted me. And he took us, and he introduced us to some of the people in Vienna that were members of AA. We couldn't understand them. Not all of them. Ich sprach und sie Deutsch enough to get keep from getting hungry. That's about all that I could do in the way of German. But we knew that we were with friends. Isn't it great? Isn't it something to be grateful for? That's what I like about AA. That's what I like about membership in this group, membership in this fellowship of ladies and gentlemen. We came back on one of those trips and stopped in Honolulu. Of course, they spoke English there. And we were greeted again. And I like the way they greet you in Honolulu. They put a layer on your neck and then put their arms around you and kiss you. And that's kind of fun. And you see, we also have fun in AA. We have an enjoyable time. And that's one of the things that I like about it. That's why I say I'm wandering around this morning, because I'm thinking of all the good things. Let's keep it on the up. That's what I believe is it. Our responsibility to be a member of AA is to be happy, secure, comfortable, always knowing that we're not going to be in any trouble. So what are some of the other things that I have written down here? Guarantees, security, comfort, friends, closer contact with the higher power, steps 10, 11, and 12. Having had a spiritual, we used to say spiritual experience, I'm glad they changed it, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we endeavored to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers and to practice all of these principles in our daily life. 8 million people gathered together in spirit, making things a little nicer to live. I like that. Those are some of the things. Freedom. Freedom from worry. That's another note that I made here. Freedom from worry. Yeah. It isn't very much fun to become mature. I refuse to use any other adjective about than that to describe my years on this earth. I live in a retirement community out here. I like it. I've learned something. I never say, how are you? I usually say, I hope you're feeling good. I got 50-50 chance of being right. That's better than the chance you have on the New York Stock Exchange. And time is limited. So if you say, I hope you're feeling good, you're either going to get yes or no. If you say, how are you, time is limited, and some of these people will tell you. So you learn. I've learned, and we're learning all the time how to be contented, how to be happy, how to be up on things. That's one of the many things that I love about AA. Let's review for just a moment. I don't know how many of you have had an opportunity to read my friend Chuck C's book, Another New Pair of Glasses. But Chuck used to come up, we lost him several years ago, but he used to come, he had been a member of AA for a good many years when Katie and I moved from the Far East, from New York to Los Angeles. And I used to hear him, and he was a magnificent speaker. And he talked about the 12 steps. What does it say in chapter 5? Here are the steps we took. And he used to emphasize that. We took them. We didn't study them. Sure, step studies are all right, but let's don't forget, we took them. We didn't interpret them. What difference does it make whether John believes this one and Mary believes this one and you should do this one according to Elizabeth and Ralph says you ought to do it this way? The point is, we take them. We took them. And we took them with God as we understand him. And it is my believing that we understood him, was put in there because we wanted to satisfy the people that were agnostics. There were some members of the AAs in the early days who were atheists, but when that phrase came in there, as we understood him, it was accepted. I believe my understanding of God, my higher power, is a little different than it was a little over a half a century ago. But regardless of that, the idea is that this is an active, dynamic program. I don't know whether many of you know that they weren't sure just what they were going to call us when it got started. But someone suggested it might be called the James Club. Why? Because the theme of the book of James is faith without works is dead. And this is not a dead program. It's an active, dynamic program. And we work. How many times have you heard this? I heard it yesterday. A lady that lives at the, at where I live, at the retirement community, was talking about a friend of hers who died. And this woman said, she tried AA, but it didn't work. It never works. We are the people who do the working. Let's keep that in mind. AA isn't flat. It's alive. It's active. It's dynamic. The book of James said, faith without works is dead. And I like that definition of the word faith. The substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. Substance, something that the alcoholic can get his teeth into. Hope, that wonderful word that has come back into our consciousness. Ladies and gentlemen, evidence is the strongest word in the whole body of the law. It's that that is accepted by a jury as incontrovertible fact, and it cannot be attacked if it's real evidence. Faith is evidence of things unseen. John mentioned the fact that Dr. Bob came to see me on Sunday morning. I was confused. Didn't know what it was all about. These guys had told me their stories. Some of them had just missed going to jail. One guy particularly had just missed going to jail because he was too drunk to go out on a heist. And he got sober. They'd had experiences that I couldn't have lived through. Then Dr. Bob came in. We sat down. He wasn't particularly good looking, but he had a sort of a force to him. And he had a kind of a Down East accent. He was from Vermont. I don't remember much of what he said. John mentioned it this morning. He did say this one thing. Duke, everything's going to be all right. In so doing, he was paraphrasing a friend of mine. I don't care whether you agree with me that Jesus of Nazareth was divine, but you'll have to agree with me that he was a great teacher, a great rabbi, that he must have had some influence because we date our rent checks from the date of his ministry right now. And when he left his group, and he had a group. He had a group of people around him. Do you think we're arrogant if we can identify ourselves in AA as possibly like the beginnings of the early church? I don't think so. How did we grow to 8 million people? Because one person talked to another person, another one talked to a few more, and it grew and it spread, and so the idea of Jesus and the love of Christianity grew and spread. But we do not exclude anybody. We have members of AA who belong to the Muslim church. We have groups that meet in the Muslim countries where it's against their spiritual law to drink, and yet they do drink, and we help them keep their spiritual law. But what did Dr. Bob say to me? Duke, everything's going to be all right. In so doing, he was paraphrasing what was said to his group. Let not your hearts be troubled. Let me close by reading this. So Bill W. left with us this great testimonial of faith. Out of the bitter problems of his life, he said, and this is a quotation, "Perhaps only those who have tasted of the fruits of dependence on a higher power can understand the true meaning of personal liberty and the freedom of the human spirit." Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. Please check out our website at www.sobrietytalks.com. Thank you.
My name is Duke Paddock. I want to send you my greetings from Jacksonville, Florida. My wife, Katie, and I are sorry we cannot be there to meet all you folks in person, but that's not possible this evening. It was announced in your printed publicity I was as the oldest living member of AA. That statement can be interpreted in two ways. Perhaps I do have the greatest number of years of membership in the fellowship, and consequently the greatest number of years of sobriety. I had my last drink on August the 15th, 1940, so last August I celebrated 54 years without a drink, and I haven't had one since last August either. For that I am truly grateful to my higher power, whom I choose to call God. There is, however, another aspect of that word oldest, and that is my actual age. At my next birthday, which is March the 18th, 1995, I'll be 90 years of age. There may be others in our membership who have more age than I do, and if that is so, more power to them. I hope with those members everything hurts in the right places as it does with me. I remember very well my introduction to AA. Bob Feller pitched a no-hit game for the Cleveland Indians in the summer of 1940. It was against the St. Louis Browns, which later became the Baltimore Orioles. When the game was over, the reporters rushed into the clubhouse to congratulate Bob Feller, and they also interviewed his battery mate, catcher Raleigh Hemsley. They asked him some direct questions, like, "How did you do such a good job today when only a short time ago you were going to be thrown out of baseball because you were a drunkard?" Raleigh broke his anonymity and told those reporters how he was meeting with a small group in Akron who called themselves Alcoholics Anonymous. This story hit the front page of the Cleveland newspaper, and my supervisor in the company I was working for saw it and was very interested. Katie and I were out of Toledo for a long weekend, and when we returned, we found a letter from my boss asking me to meet him at 8 o'clock Friday morning at a downtown hotel in Toledo, and also saying that he wanted to talk to my wife at 10 o'clock that morning. I wondered what it was all about. When Katie came down to the hotel, he met her, saw that she was comfortable, then turned to me and said, "I want to talk to you, Duke, about your drinking." Oh, boy. Then he went on to explain that he'd been investigating, quote, alcoholic cures, end of quote, like the Keeley cure and others, but he was really impressed by what he had discovered about AA. He called it Alcoholics Anonymous. He said to me, "You don't have to join this, but you will have to do something because I can't front for you with the company anymore." He went on to say, "Duke, I think this will appeal to you because I think it is psychologically sound and religiously sane." He told me that two men would come to our apartment on Sunday afternoon to explain AA to me, and that I should do anything they wanted me to do and the company would pay for it. The rest is history. these two wonderful guys called on me. They invited me to come to Akron for the following weekend, which I did, and there I was a patient at City Hospital, and Dr. Bob was my physician. That weekend in the hospital was something I will never forget and will always be very grateful for. The members came to visit me in my hospital room and told me their stories. Some of them were the ones whose stories were published in our big book. For instance, there was the traveler, editor, scholar, whose name was Jim Scott. He provided me with some very inspirational reading material. Also, there was the ward of the probate court, who was Bill Van Horn. And then there was Fired Again, whose name was Wally Gillum, and he made a tremendous impression on me. Of course, there were others. I want to tell you about Sunday morning. Dr. Bob himself came in, and we had coffee together. I remember one statement he made, and it has remained with me all these years. He said, "Duke, everything's going to be all right." Just think what those words meant to me, gave to me. They gave me assurance. Dr. Bob was paraphrasing a statement made many, many, many years ago. It is, "Let not your hearts be troubled." That assurance, coming from one of the co-founders of our fellowship, gave me hope. And when I was shaving that morning, all of a sudden I knew something. I knew I was going to tell Katie the truth, and that I was going to live my life in the future with the security the AA program promised to me. I had a sense of peace and comfort that was most pleasant, and I looked forward to the future. The following day, Monday, Katie and I were in Youngstown, Ohio. She had come down on the bus from Toledo on Sunday, and we had ridden over to Youngstown in the company car. I left the hotel Monday morning, and before I made my first call on a customer, I went to the office of Neil Kennedy, whose name had been given to me in Akron. He welcomed me like a long-lost brother and told me that he and his wife Marion wanted Katie and me to come to their home for dinner that evening. We did so, and we met Marion, who was one of the most charming ladies we had ever seen. After dinner, and incidentally, there was another couple who were at the table with us. The man was a member of the fellowship. Anyway, as I said, after dinner, we went out on the front porch of the Kennedy home, and another member had brought a prospect over for me to talk to. So I made my first 12th step. I was fired up and in pretty good shape, so I told this fellow all about AA. After all, I'd been a member for about 36 hours, and I did know all about it. When I stopped for breath, the prospect said, "Well, that's all well and good for you folks who've known each other for a long time, but I'm a newcomer, and I don't understand what this is all about." He couldn't believe that I had known these folks for only a couple of hours. I did know Dave S., his last name was Sweeney, who formerly lived in Youngstown, Ohio. The local group there was organized in the fall of 1940, and Katie and I were fortunate enough to be present at that first meeting. It was conducted by Dr. Bob Smith himself, and we remember his remarks very clearly. The group increased in attendance, and it became necessary to secure a larger place for their meetings. Dave was appointed chairman of a committee to find such a meeting place. He went to the American Legion, which had a nice hall in its building, and attempted to rent this hall for the group. The owners of the building wanted to know about their prospective tenants. When Dave told them it was Alcoholics Anonymous, they said, "No, sir, we don't want any drinking going on in here." They didn't know anything about AA. Dave finally explained the purpose of our fellowship, and they finally agreed to allow the group to meet there. I think the entire incident is amusing. I'd like to mention a few more things about Dr. Bob and his wonderful wife, Annie Smith. Katie traveled with me after I joined AA, and we tried to be in Canton, Ohio, on Wednesday evenings as frequently as we could, because we could drive up to Akron after I was through with my work, and we could attend the AA meeting at the King School. These meetings were great, and in addition to our becoming better acquainted with the program by attending them, the meetings themselves were a lot of fun. Dr. Bob usually had something to say, and Annie always contributed to the meeting. Her remarks were stimulating. I remember one of her sayings, which she told us she had received from a friend of hers who was a Native American, an Indian. It was, "Never criticize until you have walked a mile in the other person's moccasins." That taught us tolerance, which the book says, "Live and let live." After the meeting was over in the King School, we always went to the donut shop for refreshments. We would gather around Dr. Bob and listen to his remarks. He had a down east accent and a dry sense of humor, which was delightful. He frequently sent us into paroxysms of laughter. We always look forward to Wednesday evenings in Akron. There was a great deal of family life in those early days. The meetings were open. The non-alcoholic spouse was always welcome, and there seemed to be a friendly atmosphere which was peaceful and pleasant. We put a great deal of emphasis on one-to-one relationship. I remember that in Toledo one Saturday after there had been some local publicity about AA, Katie and I went out and made a dozen AA 12-step calls. I talked to the prospective member and Katie talked to the spouse, if there was one. In our opinion, that was the kind of AA that accomplished a great deal. There are also some very important things. First, we have sufficient spiritual power to find the answer to any question and the solution to any problem connected with our disease of alcoholism. We have also learned that we can replenish our spiritual power every day by remembering the promise we made to ourselves not to drink today. I feel that I must mention the four absolutes because they are fundamental in our program. They are 1, absolute honesty; 2, absolute unselfishness; 3, absolute purity; 4, absolute love. Let's talk about them for a moment or two. First, absolute honesty. This means just what it says. We must live honest lives with no deviation whatever. One of the symptoms of alcoholism is a tendency to lie. If we do that, we wear ourselves out because we have to remember so much. Now we don't have to recall what we said that we did yesterday. Absolute honesty is a must. Second, absolute unselfishness. Every time we go out on a 12-step, we are practicing absolute unselfishness. We are trying to carry a positive message to someone whom we may not have even met or known before. Third, absolute purity. Believe me, this is not a mollycoddle word. I heard it first from a garbage man in Akron. That is a fact. Not long before I met him, he was the drunken driver of a garbage truck. But Dr. Bob and his AA friends had worked on him, and he was recovering. He said to me, "Show me the kind of thoughts a man has, and I will know what kind of a man he is." I realized that I wasn't comfortable with my thoughts, so I tried to improve my thinking, and the result was that I acquired the peace of mind that AA wants me to have. Fourth, absolute love. This is the kind of love our friend St. Paul was writing about when he said, "Love suffers long and is kind. It's not puffed up. And now abideth faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love." Let's remember what Dr. Bob said. Keep it simple and lubricate it with love. We also have practical faith. What do I mean by practical faith? I consider myself one of the luckiest guys who ever lived because I learned about faith from men like Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson and from wonderful gals like Marty Mann. They told me that faith without works is dead, which is the theme of the book of James. And we know that our program, which is based on faith, is anything but dead. It is an active, dynamic force which is keeping us going day after day. Another bit is security. We know we are safe. We just practice our program every day. You have heard the phrase, easy does it. That doesn't mean take it easy. It means do it day by day until it is easy to do. All champions know that, and members of our fellowship are champions. Just remember, no 12th step is ever a failure. Maybe we haven't convinced our new prospect and he or she may continue to drink, but we have remained okay on the road to recovery. AA wants us to be comfortable, to have the peace of mind which we deserve. Our sense of humor is restored. Now we can laugh and enjoy life, which we could not do so before we joined AA. I heard a story which fits into our thinking. There's a small area in North America where Canada is south of the United States. I'm talking about Windsor, Ontario. It seems that there was a fellow sitting on a curbstone there one day, and he would say, "Can't be done." He repeated that phrase several times. The policeman asked him, "What is the matter?" The fellow pointed to a large electric sign and repeated again, "It can't be done." The sign read, "Drink Canada Dry." Yes, we can see the humor in our lives now. Another gift to us is freedom. We're not limited anymore by obsession or habit. We are free to make our own decisions. We are even free to choose our own higher power. All AA demands of us that we have complete confidence in that higher power. AA gives us friends. We are never alone or lonely again. Wherever we go, we can find others who think like we do. That wasn't always the case, but now our fellowship is worldwide and we can find real friends wherever we go, wherever we may be. Katie and I have made contacts in many parts of the world. We actually found an English-speaking group in Rome, Italy one year when we were traveling there. Each one of us is rich in friends, and for that we are truly grateful. Another aspect of our AA program is its pragmatism. That's a sort of deep philosophical word, but it isn't really. Pragmatism means if it works, it's right. And we know that AA works. Great scholars and spiritual leaders have testified to that effect. Think about it. In little more than half a century, our program has been accepted and endorsed everywhere. We can report on actually millions of folks who have made a success of AA. Let's consider for a moment what I term as the greatest gift of all. It is the grace of God. It is the undeserved reward that is guaranteed to us by our higher power. The author Samuel Clemens wrote under a nom de plume which many of us recognize. It was Mark Twain. This phrase came from the riverboat traffic of his time. A so-called lead man would stand at the prow of a riverboat with a line in his hand. At the end of the line was a lead weight. He would throw this line overboard and watch carefully as the lead weight touched bottom. Then he would look at the marks on the line and call out their respective depths. If he called by the mark 1, the pilot knew he was in dangerous shallow water and would alter the course of the riverboat. If the call was by the mark 20, the pilot knew he was in a deeper and safer channel and could proceed on his way. You and I don't have to worry about shoals and dangerous waters to the right or left. We know we are in a safe stretch of life if we go straight ahead. We are guaranteed safety, peace of mind, and comfort if we are on Mark Twain. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. Please check out our website at www.sobrietytalks.com. Thank you.